Howdy, folks. Welcome back to DeadBeat.com. I'm Uncle Bill.
And I'm the Creepy Tuckin', if you will. And this week, we'll take a little break from the interviews. Because, you know, we've been keeping ourselves really busy lately. Last week, we had a big Friday the 13th bash.
That's right. And everybody who didn't check that show out, if you still want to check it out, it's well worth listening to. We've got the exclusive interview with Victor Miller.
That's right.
We got the Horror Roundtable up again. Friday the 13th style. It's all we talk about. It's Friday the 13th related topics.
If you're Friday the 13th fanatic, you've got to check it out.
That's right. But as he said, we're not going to do any interviews this week because, well, we just don't want to. We've got more important things to talk about week. And you'll find out what that is here very shortly.
Yeah, it's a little something different. We've never done anything like this. We're going to super analyze, I guess, a movie, I guess you could call it a movie,
mm-hmm.
that we watched this past weekend, which was Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
We're going to offer our keen insight into this because everybody seems to have an opinion about this film, and it seems to be pretty divided among people that either really like it or really hate it. So we're just going to tell you what we thought about it. And, of course, we've got the reviews that we have every week. We've got 4 DVDs this week to review. And some of them just came out this week or will be coming out next week.
Right.
But they include, got the new film from John Scheiben, who I'm a big fan of because he was involved with X-Files as a writer for a long time. It's called Rest Stop.
That's right. And in addition to talking about The Beginning, which is supposed to be before everything in Texas Chainsaw, this is actually the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the new 2-disc edition from Dark Sky Films. We'll be talking about that.
I'm also going to be talking about a film that's gotten a lot of press here recently, I know, especially from Fangoria. It's John Gulager's new Slither-like slime fest called Feast.
Also be discussing the new Lucky McKee film with Bruce Campbell co-starring in it. This one is The Woods.
So we've got all that, plus our in-depth analyses, if you will, of the wonderful Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning.
Right. So we're getting back to our regular schedule.
Last week was a bit of an exception because, you know, it was Friday the 13th. We had to do something special.
No.
We had to give back for all that we've gotten. And I think we did that.
We did. We did do that. We have some news to get to. And some big news if you're a fan of George Romero. I know that, you know, a good portion of people on the message board are. His new film, Diary of the Dead, began principal photography this past Tuesday. So we can look forward to shots of that getting on the internet soon. I'm sure they'll be up soon. You know, somebody will bootleg something. So I'm looking forward to anything from George Romero because, you know, he's one of the last masters of horror that even attempts to do anything now, it seems like.
That's pretty amazing, considering if you were listening to any of the horror news for the last, I don't know, 2 weeks, you would have thought the guy was dying.
Yeah.
They had so much shit about him collapsing.
I think the good people at Blood Disgusting was in charge of overblowing that.
Does that fucking site ever get anything right? Ever?
No, but that doesn't matter, because they're still the biggest horror site on the internet.
That's great. I'm thrilled to death.
They can make as many mistakes as possible, and, you know.
Here's something I know a lot of people on the board are going to be interested in, because right now there's a poll up about this particular woman. But Asia Argento has been chosen to model herself on a website. Now, this is really, really interesting because she's going to be involved in a new film. And what this is basically kind of like a documentary that follows, you know, herself around with a video camera on any regular day in kind of like a diary project. And over 10 days from the 17th to the 25th of October, she will document her daily life while she is over promoting her new film in a series of intimate video entries that she will publish 3 times per day at noon, 6 p.m. and midnight. Now you can go to www.showstudio.com/project/don't-bother-to-knock and you can actually see, I actually went on this site, you can actually see some of these diaries and the stills and stuff that she's taken from these things. So anybody that's a big Asia Argento mark wants to see her daily life, which I know there's some stalkers that probably would like to do that.
I'm sure, yeah. The tattoo that she has near her crotch.
That's a very nice tattoo.
I like
and the
that.
Big friggin' like growth twin she's got on her back. It's a mole, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. That damn thing's the size of a sealed old pancake.
Is it getting to be about the size of a Dusty's mole on his side, baby?
It's not as bad as the oil stain on Dusty, but it's
We got some great news on Cabin Fever 2. The sequel begin production just after the first of the year in South Carolina.
South Kakalaki.
Initially, it was to begin in November, but was pushed back because of South Carolina's film incentive program running out of funds until the new year, folks. South Carolina has seen a huge influx of production work in the past few months due to their very attractive 30% film incentive. So it sounds like this shit's like really low budget.
We need something like that. Like Kentucky needs a film incentive program.
We have tobacco incentive, though.
And marijuana incentive. Yeah. And crystal meth.
That's all we need. I mean, South Carolina, what else are they known? Are they known for?
Cox.
Yeah, they are known for Cox. South Carolina Cox. Yeah, a lot of people. Game University Cox. Of South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Myrtle Beach. They're known for Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, I'm sitting there trying to think. Aren't they known for, like, peanuts or some bullshit like that?
But they're now known for their very attractive 30% film incentive. So that's another thing South Carolina can...
Super. Yeah. Okay, here's something that's going to make Adam Beck automatically shit his pants. Blue Underground will reissue William Lustig's notorious horror film debut, Maniac, on DVD January the 30th, 2007.
I've been waiting on that one for months.
Now, you got to check out some of these friggin' actual specs of the film. The disc will present the movie in 16:9 enhanced 1.851 widescreen with 6.1 DTS, ES, 5.1 Dolby Digital, and Dolby Surround soundtracks.
6.1.
That's right. The extras will include audio commentary by Lustig Savini, the editor, and the assistant, Luke Walter. Radio interview with Lustig and lead actress Callie Monroe. The Joe Spinelli story, documentary, theatrical trailers, TV spots, radio spots, poster and still galleries, and all kinds of other luscious goodness. And actually, the retail price will be $19.95. You know that's not what it's going to retail for, though, actually. Probably
about 14-something on a deep discount. Yeah, I know that we've talked about this release for a long time. I know Blue Underground was going to reissue it, but we didn't know when, and I'm definitely going to buy this one because that's one disc I don't own.
You can buy that January the 30th. 2007, if you will.
All right. Universal is setting up to offer Naomi Watts, who was in the luscious King Kong movie that we all enjoyed.
Yeah, I didn't see it, thank God.
To star in Platinum Dunes, The Birds, another remake, which is an adaptation of a classic short story.
Will she be playing Tippi Hedren's part then?
I'm sure she will. Yeah. She looks a lot like Tippi.
She does kind of have that look.
The latest news on a writer is that Leslie Dixon of The Thomas Crown Affair. Remember that movie?
No.
Is now on board. The new version will be based on the short story by Daphne du Maurier, to which Universal owns the rights and which inspired Hitchcock's movie. Tippi Hedren starred in the original film, as you remember.
Here's another story that I personally handpicked because of AB. It's just too hilarious not to talk about.
You love AB.
I really do. But it was just one of those stories. Apparently, Variety has reported that Pete Holmes of the Mondo Macabro Company is going to produce a film called Hell's Ground in conjunction with the country's Bubonic Films, which is a great name for a film company. It's about a group of teenagers who are diverted on their way to a rock concert by protesters demonstrating against polluted water. Forced to take a back road, they soon encounter both a family of deranged murderers and rampaging undead ghouls. Now, here's what makes this particular film special. They are definitely the first Muslim zombies. That's right, folks. We don't have songs or comedy sequences, none of the prerequisites of South Asian films. It's a complete ripping off of what's expected from local productions. The grisly makeup was created by Nawab Sagar, whoever that is. But the concept of Muslim zombies, to me, is just worth the price of admission.
Let me go back. That guy's name was Nawab Sagar.
Nawab Sagar, yeah.
I gotta love that name.
It's either Nawab or Nawab or
Nunab.
Does it matter? Sagar is his last name, I'm pretty sure.
The Grudge 2 opened up the number one spot at the box office this past weekend. $22 million, folks. Did it really look that good? America, I'm asking you a question. Did it really look that good?
I don't know. I personally think that the sequence where the green hand comes around Sarah Michelle Gellar's head again,
yeah,
that was just fucking, that sold me right there.
I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I understand. Anyway, though, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, dropped to fifth place with $7.8 million, and it's made a total of $30.5 million so far. So, you know, a lot of horror movies this season. Unfortunately, none of them are that good.
Yeah, I was telling you before, you couldn't really strap me down and make me watch Grudge 2.
Yeah, I never imagined they'd do a sequel, but I think the original Grudge
amazingly
made a ton
though,
of money.
It did make a ton of money. Yeah. But amazingly, though, that movie looks even worse than the original, I think. Previews that I've seen of it.
I'm sure it is.
Here's two real quick releases that I want to talk about. Unearthed Films, who we're big fans of, picked up the rights to the infamous Japanese flick Killer Pussy.
Killer Pussy.
For a DVD release in North America. There's no dates on this. They also picked up the famous Harry Carey series from Japan. Also, there's a film being released called Island of the Dead, which I didn't know this until right now. The guy's name on the actual film is named Vincent Dawn, but it's actually Bruno Mattei. For some reason, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't ever use his real name anymore, and he hasn't for a long time.
That's probably a good idea, actually.
But
there's a lot of shitty movies he's been a part of.
So. Yeah, but there's no release date for that film either. It's actually going to be coming out, but it's a work in progress, I suppose.
Bruno Mattei.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on. We've got news on a movie called Death Sentence. John Goodman joined the cast of the next movie from director James Wan.
Hmm.
The film stars Kevin Bacon of the Bacon Brothers, mm-hmm. world famous.
And Animal House.
Yeah. As a father out for revenge after his family is attacked in a gang initiation crime. Got a bunch of Lee Winnell's actually starring in this. Another one.
Oh, the douchebag from Saul.
Yeah. Mm. He's making the break into acting.
Actually, he acted in Saul, didn't he?
Yeah. Anyway, though, Death Sentence. Watch out for that one from 20th Century Fox. I'm sure it'll suck.
Yeah. Here's an interesting story. The first horror-themed reality show. And it had to happen sometime, I guess.
Horror?
Yeah. By next summer, genre fans may have a reality show customized to their taste to chat around about the water cooler. I doubt that seriously, but anyway. Apparently, Sam Raimi, according to Variety, Raimi and longtime partner Robert Tappert, along with creator Gunnar Wiederberg, okay, are developing the reality series House of Horrors, in which contestants will face their greatest fears in a creepy house. Jeez, that sounds a lot like Fear Factor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But, and rather than
get... like something they had on... Didn't they have a show like that on MTV, like, a few years ago?
They had some show where people would just go into, like, a haunted house with, like, cameras on their heads and shit, but that wasn't, like...
Yeah, and they had to, like, participate in, like, different tasks and stuff.
Here's the catch, though. Rather than get booted off by their colleagues or voted off by viewers, players will get killed off.
That's silly. How the fuck is that reality? You know that shit ain't happening. Fuck.
Oh, yeah, but that's just going to be great. But, yeah, that's scheduled for sometime in 2007, so you can look forward to that show.
I'm willing to bet that'll never happen.
That's got Sam Raimi behind it. Generally speaking, anything Sam Raimi gets behind goes ahead. I don't know why. I think Spider-Man had something to do with that.
I don't know, though. That's a pretty stupid idea.
As it is, yeah. I'm sorry. It'll air on the CW network if anybody gets
it. Well, okay, it might happen on the CW network.
Yeah.
Now, they'll give fucking that guy D.L. Hughley a show, so, you know. They'll do about anything on there.
I look forward to that.
The new movie from Blair Witch Project co-creator Eduardo Sanchez, Altered, will make its direct-to-DVD debut December 19th from Universal Home Video. This was originally scheduled for a theatrical release by Rogue Pictures, but for some reason, I don't know, they just felt the need to release the... What does Rogue release? Don't they release Grudge and shit?
I was on there last night. They released a bunch of that horrible shit like that.
The movie's about a quartet of friends who capture an extraterrestrial creature and plan to exact revenge for the alien's abduction of one of their friends years before. find themselves in way over their heads. The disc will retail for $19.95 and will be presented in an anamorphic 185:1 transfer and widescreen. Dolby Digital 5.1 surround sound. The only reported extra will be deleted scenes. Look forward to that, though, because those guys really need to get back into horror. And it's a shame that they...
Here's the thing about that, though. I just can't look at that film or those guys the same after watching last broadcast. I don't know why that is. I'm pretty sure it has something to do with the fact that I'm positive they stole that con. But I really can't.
Yeah. Anyway, though, I guess we should take a quick break and get back into the news here in a couple minutes. You're on DeadBit.com.
Concluded. In other news, it's been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder. A widespread investigation of funeral homes, morgues, and hospitals has concluded that the unburied dead have been returning to life and convening upon downtown Racine for the It Came From Lake Michigan Film Festival, a festival dedicated to celebrating independent horror, sci-fi, and fantasy films. If you dare, join them October 20th through the 22nd. For more details, see itcamefromlakemichigan.com.
Greetings, folks, and welcome back to DeadPit.com. As on to the news we go. The Masters of Horror premiered. Now, we know it's going to premiere on television soon, but actually, two episodes from the second season will world premiere running Thursday, October the 19th through Sunday, October the 22nd at the Tribeca Cinemas. That's 54 Varick Street at Canal, following a kickoff party Wednesday, October the 18th, which apparently you probably already missed by the time the show airs. But Tobe Hooper's The Damn Thing screens Friday the 20th at 10 p.m., while series creator Mick Garris's Valerie on the Stairs will be shown on Saturday the 21st at 9 p.m., at which time Garris will also be presented with the Fest Lifetime Achievement Award.
Lifetime Achievement for doing a shitload of Stephen King adaptation.
Yeah, apparently. But, actually, there's other guests at the event which you can meet, including Ken Foree, who will introduce and take part in a Q&A for a special presentation of Rob Zombie's Director's Cut of The Devil's Rejects, on the 21st at 5:30 p.m.
The director's cut, in case you don't know, includes shots of Sid Haig's balls.
Yeah, that's the big thing about the director's cut. There'll be competing films, including there'll be director John Carl Beekler and star Tony Todd and Vernon Wells with The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde at October 20th at 7 p.m. You can see director Brian Norton and actress Betsy Palmer with the short Penny Dreadful, October the 20th at 8:30. And director Harry Basil with Fingerprints, October the 21st at 12 noon. So that's some stuff to check out for people that are fans of horror and horror films.
Yeah, I guess we can go through the... We actually do have the season guide for the Masters of Horror series as far as, you know, at least the first five episodes on Showtime. We can talk about them. The debut episode, which is coming up a week from tonight, October 27th, The Damn Thing, which Tobe Hooper, director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist.
Yeah, and Life Force.
I swear
force.
That's what it says right here. Okay, the Damn Thing is about an unknown monstrous force that descends upon a small Texas town, turning husband against wife, brother against sister, parent against child. Tortured by his own tragic past, Sheriff Kevin Reddle, played by Sean Patrick Flannery, must overcome horrific rage if he is set to restore order. Marissa Coughlin and Ted Raimi also star in this apocalyptic tale of terror. As we said before, Tobe Hooper is directing this. That's a week from tonight. 2 weeks from tonight is John Landis' edition this season, Family, which follows the Fullers. A young married couple move to a new town and discover that their neighbor, played by George Wendt of Cheers
and House,
is not what he seems. He putters away at his hobbies. However, his passion is anything but innocent. The Fullers will soon know what evil lurks in the depth of the suburban basement. That's November 3rd. Now, the V word from our favorite director, Ernest Dickerson.
Mm-hmm.
That one's about two teenage boys who break in a mortuary in hopes of seeing a dead body. The macabre punishment visited upon them will far outweigh their crime. Instead of fulfilling their morbid curiosity, the boys are attacked by a rampaging vampire played by Michael Ironside.
God, he was killing Scanners.
And must ultimately decide whether to sacrifice themselves or survive as bloodthirsty killers. That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's A-Dick.
We got to support A-Dick. I mean, come on. E to the D-I-C, motherfucker. E-Dick. Last one I want to talk about, though. We have the whole thing, but I don't want to bore you. Brad Anderson. And this one sounds like. And this one is November 17th. Quality control supervisor Larry Pierce, played by Chris Bauer, spends his days monitoring the nuances of his tech support staff's telephone conversation, listening is his life. However, when grief over his son's death leads to a supernaturally heightened sense of sound, Larry is forced to take violent actions to silence the horrific voices in his head. And that's that. And we got, actually, this, I think that this year's, as far as the plots, they sound a lot better.
Well, shit, as far as even the directors go, I'm really, really interested to see how some of these people like Brad Anderson, especially Tom Holland, episodes play out.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I know a lot of people bitch about Showtime yanking the Takashi McKay episode, and, you know, you can't really look at Showtime with any sort of respect. Now, you got to look at it like this. They're a fucking company, okay? It's their show. If they don't want to show something, they ain't going to fucking show it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to listen to people on the internet bitching about it. So,
and I'm sorry to say that I can see if you were in control of, like, quality control for Showtime and somebody sent you that episode.
Yeah.
Or if anybody in your right fucking mind, you'd probably say that would be hilarious.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can't show it on anything. I mean,
you imagine, honest to God, if they'd shown that on Showtime, how much fucking, like,
it would be all over, like, fucking Fox News would be going wild. Mm-hmm. O'Reilly'd be on there. Oh, dead fetus is being thrown in a river.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We
all those up next.
We enjoyed it and everything, but you got to understand that even Showtime has limits. I don't give a shit if you pay for it or not. They're not going to show stuff like that.
Right.
But, okay. Have you ever really wanted to meet Bruce Campbell, the stars of the Evil Dead series?
I have actually wanted to, but until, you know, that we love
you are in luck. Because if you live anywhere in New York City, which we don't, but if you did.
Scott Goldberg lives anywhere near New York City.
At the New World Stages, 340 West 50th Street. Apparently, the new Evil Dead the Musical, which is premiering there, series star Bruce Campbell will be making special appearances at the show's first two regular performances, Wednesday, November 1st, and Thursday, November 2nd at 8 p.m. Also, though, besides Bruce Campbell, Tom Sullivan, creator of the Book of the Dead, will be on hand for the Monday, November 6th performance. And the ladies of the Evil Dead, Ellen Sandweiss, Betsy Baker, and Sarah York, will attend on Monday, November the 27th. So you can go down there and check that out. You can go to EvilDeadTheMusical.com if you want to check that out.
Yeah, I don't like Evil Dead the Musical.
Have you seen it?
No, but I wouldn't want to see anything like that. I think the idea is silly.
It is silly, but for some reason, that movie kind of lends itself to be an
idea
like that.
I'll tell you what, too, man. Ellen Sandweiss is hot.
You just want to bring that up?
Yeah.
Okay. And you are correct.
Man, we haven't really talked about her much on here because, you know, we got other stuff to talk about. But she's like 50 years old. Nearly 50. I don't know if she's 50 yet. She looks like she's 30. She looks freaking good.
I love you, Anna. You listen out there. That's true. She does look good. You know, somebody else is around that age that looks good, but is actually the exact opposite because she's a horrible bitch.
Who?
Debbie Foreman.
Is now, I think, last I heard about her, she was coming out with a new video series called Yoga Bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out more about that on the show, on the message board.
Meditations of a Whores.
So anyway, yeah. Hate Debbie Foreman, but we love Ellen Sandweiss.
That's right. I've just not been a big fan of Debbie Foreman's ever since she basically told us to go fuck a brick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to mention one more thing. There's a movie theater in Texas, in Denton, Texas, to be exact. There's a guy by the name of John Gray that runs this thing called Friday Night Frights. which is a film festival, in which, and all throughout the month of October, he's going to be playing different films that we've all grown up with and loved, such as, we already missed this one, unfortunately, but he played on Friday the 13th, he played Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter, the original 35mm. These are all original 35mm films that he shows. But he's going to be playing Friday, October the 20th, he'll be playing Evil Dead 2. And then, this is the big one, he's going to be playing on October the 27th, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 with special guest Bill Leatherface Johnson is going to attend the screening. So if you're in around Denton or anywhere around, you know, that area of Texas, you can check this out, because the guy actually plays the original 35mm. He's going to be showing Halloween 4 around Halloween 2. So
I want to go to that.
I do too, really, but we can't because we live in this shithole.
Why can't anybody in Kentucky do something like that?
I don't know. But that's all I got.
I just got one screening I want to mention. I think it's a really cool one. This Tuesday at the New Beverly Cinema in Los Angeles, California, it's the Code Red Night at the Grindhouse, which, 7:30, you'll get to see 1983's slasher classic, The Forest.
Oh.
And at 9:30, 1982's Don't Go in the Woods Alone, which we've talked to James Bryan on here about that. And actually, there's going to be some special guests there. Don Jones, the director of The Forest, will be there, along with James Bryan, the director of Don't Go in the Woods Alone. And additional guests are to be announced. So if you're anywhere near the Los Angeles area, you can go check that out. 7165 Beverly Boulevard in Los Angeles, CA. Or you can go to their website, myspace.com/grindhouse.
And I probably should have mentioned this before, but if you are interested and live around Texas in that the Friday Night Frights, then you can, actually they don't have an official website, but you can go to myspace.com/Friday Night Frights if you want to learn more about specifics.
I do. I want to learn more about that just so I can cry. So I'm not going.
There's one other thing, too, I want to mention real quick before I get on to the DVDs and shit that I always do.
A lot of DVDs this week, I'm guessing.
There's a premise for a film that I just heard about that is just one of the absolute greatest ideas. And I don't know why anybody hasn't thought of this yet, but the movie is called Zombies, Zombies, Zombies. And the basic premise of the film is...
Zombies.
A group of strippers fight a group of zombies. That's it.
Kill off.
That's the whole fucking plot. And if you want to know more about this, and I've already been to this site, this page, I'm sorry, you can go to myspace.com/zombiesmovie to check that out.
I will see it.
There's no better idea for a film than that.
Yeah, I could have just called it Zombies versus Strippers.
Yeah.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, like Alien versus Predator. Is that better? Okay, here's the DVD releases for October the 17th and October the 24th. I'm just going to pick out the ones that I give a shit about because we don't have time to go through all this. You got Feast, which this is October 17th, comes out October 17th by the Weinstein Company. You got Frankenhooker coming out from Unearthed Films.
That already came out. It'll come out Tuesday.
That's why I said October 17th.
Okay.
But since we didn't get to do this last week, I have to back up. Masters of Horror, Pick Me Up came out from Anchor Bay. The Omen came out from Fox. Red Stock from Warner Brothers. Yep. Salvage from Echo Bridge. And Saw 2 from Lionsgate on Blu-ray, which nobody gives a shit about Blu-ray.
We're going to be reviewing most of those you mentioned, though.
Yeah, I know. And also for next Tuesday, which is October 24th, we have Deadlands The Rising, which is, from what I understand, being released by Tempe now. Is that right?
Right.
So make sure I get that right. Okay. You've got Evil Bong from Full Moon, which we're supposed to get, but probably won't. You've got Halloween Night from Asylum. You've got A Light in the Darkness by Indican.
We pissed Asylum off somehow.
I don't know
what the hell deal was that. Whatever.
You got My Dead Girlfriend Special Edition coming out from Tempe.
That's right.
Nightmares
You'll
and
buy
Dream-
that.
Nightmares and Dreamscapes, the 3-disc set from Warner Brothers. You've got Slither coming out, special edition HD DVD from Universal. And apparently, I never even heard of this, Skinwalker, Curse of the Shaman from Anchor Bay. Why didn't we get that?
Sounds interesting. I don't know.
Well, shit.
But we'll be right back and discuss Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, only on DudeBoots.com.
They're beastly. They're bloodthirsty. They're back. Ghoulies 2. Those devilish diminutive demons have returned to scare up some ghoulie fun at a hapless house of horrors.
Satan's Den's been losing money for 16 months. Our money. We have until the end of the weekend to turn it around.
It's really scary, mister.
I bet it's not. I do.
This place is better than Epcot Center.
Come on, let's go and get the gun.
Now the profits are up, but the returns are down. Ghoulies, too. They'll get you in the end. Again.
Welcome back to Dead Pit Radio. And this is our in-depth analysis of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning, which, you know, actually opened 2 weeks ago, but we didn't get to see it until last week.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, okay, going down to the, I guess we'll just start from the beginning here.
Yep.
Going down to the theater, to be honest, we didn't have really high expectations of this film because we'd seen the remake and hated that movie.
Yep.
And basically, if you saw the previews for this movie, it made you think it was going to be exactly like the remake from the way it was shot.
Yeah, it did look exactly like the remake.
Yeah, and it did. So we got there and we sat down and we're going through the, like the 900 fucking previews that there are before a movie.
A lot of them looked horrible.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So the movie starts. And the very first thing that I remember about the movie is it's got Leatherface's mother giving birth to this thing that looks like it just came right out of fucking Larry Cohen's It's Alive.
Yeah. And she's actually already in a slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
She worked in a slaughterhouse. So after she squirts out little Leatherface or Thomas Hewitt or whatever you little dude.
I love that too. They had to give him a fucking name.
Thomas.
Retarded.
Who thought of that name too, by the way? Is that supposed to be, like, you know.
I'm sure there's some kind of background to that that'll be silly too.
That's not even halfway scary, I'm sorry.
All right.
Okay. And they throw little Leatherface or Thomas Hewitt in a dumpster. And that's how Hoyt, is that the character's name? Found him, Harley Ermey.
Yeah, we probably should mention during at this point that there's going to be spoilers.
Well, yeah, but who fucking cares? I would actually recommend nobody going to see this movie or nobody even rent the DVD.
Okay, but that being said, there's some really like anal retentive fucking people out there that hate it when people spoil movies, and there's also people that bitch at us for getting facts wrong on this show a lot.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Do you actually think we have a research department or something that helps us with this shit?
Yeah.
Shut up That's bitching true. About fucking us getting shit wrong. This ain't, you know, big operation going here. So anyway, that being said, there are spoilers coming from our mouth soon.
Yeah. So anyway, we learn about Leatherface, Thomas Hewitt. We don't learn much about him, surprisingly. I mean, he's a baby. Then he's just full grown within 2 minutes, or less than that, actually. And I was thinking at least they would try to give something sort of interesting about the background, like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if he was just a stolen baby from a hospital or something, and instead of, oh, he was just born in a slaughterhouse and they threw him away.
Well,
do something different with it. I mean, it's not interesting at all.
And the main problem I had with this film started probably at the beginning of the beginning, so to speak, was that a lot of people want to have some kind of knowledge or background about characters for these movies. For some people, I know I've heard a lot of people talk about that they're glad that they explain this. I'm not one of those people, though. I don't want to know what happened to like Leatherface and why he's a psychopath. It was good enough just to know that he was crazy. And what happened to that, by the way? Because as this film goes along, you come to find out, after Arlie Ermey picks up the kid and stuff, that Arlie Ermey's character in this film, Sheriff Hoyt, was actually captured during, I guess he said, the Korean War, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he had to, you know, he was in, like, POW, and he had to eat people to survive, and that's apparently why they're cannibals.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to know that shit. I just wanted them to be crazy. I didn't want, like, to have a background.
And they started killing after the slaughterhouse and the area closed, and everybody was going to move away from them, and you know, there's basically a reason behind all of it. Well, it's a crappy reason.
Yeah, that's the thing. The reasoning behind it is horrible in and of itself, but you don't really need a reason for a film
like
that.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, as bad as we talk about Andrew Benarski, he's not even hardly in the movie. Leatherface isn't even in the movie. It's mainly
a total of about
Harley show or whatever.
Yeah, a total about 10 minutes, I'd say, throughout that movie he's in.
So you can't really, you know, as much as we hate Andrew Bernarchuk and he's an asshole and everything, you can't really blame it on him. It's just a bad fucking movie. It's uninspired, just another chapter to make money, I guess.
Yeah, and so you go on to find out that the sheriff in this film was actually not, or in the remake, was actually not a real sheriff at all. He just stole, I guess, the clothing and the identity of a sheriff that was going to arrest him and his stepson, whatever the hell that Leatherface is supposed to be, him for killing the boss of the slaughterhouse when it closed. Yeah. Okay, so he takes over the sheriff. He kills
the
sheriff.
Which doesn't make sense.
Yeah, he kills the sheriff and takes his clothes. And so, and apparently, the sheriff is the only person within like a 100-mile radius.
Yeah. And nobody else knows who the sheriff is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that can happen.
It just works out perfectly, I guess.
But on the flip side of things, you got to have, you know, you got your group of bad guys led by Arlie Ermey and, like, two old fucking women and a guy with one leg.
Well, the guy...
And that's hilarious, too.
Yeah, the guy with one leg, the guy with no legs, actually, was the guy, you're talking about the guy that was a tow truck driver and stuff in the film?
Yeah.
He's actually got legs in the film, and it actually wants to try to give you an explanation of how it is he lost his legs.
And it's freaking hilarious.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. I don't even know. That must have been something that the writers came up with, like a last-minute pitch meeting, just to add in there. Because
the clusterfuck.
It makes no sense whatsoever. Okay, he gets shot in the leg, in one leg, and then Leatherface takes a chainsaw and cuts his leg off. And then just because Hoyt's character wants to, he cuts his other leg off. And that's how they explain it.
Yeah.
He gets Leatherface, cut his other leg off.
Yeah. But anyway,
stupid
to go back, you got the good guys, which are hilarious too. You got a couple of brothers and their girlfriends who are on their way to enlist in Vietnam. Right.
Supposedly. And by the way, I love the idea of that too, because people on the board brought this to my attention. The only reason you know that Vietnam had anything to do with this movie is so people would know it was supposed to be based in the 60s.
Right.
Because otherwise, you'd have no idea this movie was supposed to be based in the 60s.
Yeah, because it looks like the teens in it look like, you know, they could be on the cover of the Abercrombie & Fitch catalog.
Yeah, there was no, absolutely no attempt at trying to make this look, like, dated in any way.
Now, I don't understand that, too. I mean, you've got a sheriff's car. It looks like a 1960s sheriff's car. But you got your teenagers or, you know, whatever, their mid-20s, early-20s, they look, you know, they didn't do anything even to, like, clothe them like they were from the 60s. It was just really, I didn't understand that at all either, whatever.
Anyway, so they're going to Vietnam, and they're going to, I think one of them's going to register for the draft or something, doesn't matter. And as they go along let's see, how is it that they meet up? Oh, they run into a biker, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Run into a group of bikers, and one in particular has got a shotgun, and she gets him to pull over, and she's going to rob him or something like that. And at that time, Hoyt comes up and kills the biker and takes all them hostage.
Yeah. And after, the funny thing is, though, after he kills the biker, for some reason the teens still believe that he's a real sheriff and that they're going to go to the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
But he,
and even funnier is the fact that when they pull up to the house, which is obviously not anything to do with the sheriff's department, for some reason, none of them really try to get out of the car. I mean, they try the handles and stuff, but if that was a real situation, you think that they would like bust the windows out or, you know, jump in the front seat?
You would think.
It just doesn't make any sense. They just sit around basically wait for him to come back after he gets out of the car.
Yeah. The movie itself is just... It doesn't make sense. The whole movie doesn't make sense.
There's so many plot holes in this movie.
And you can nitpick it all day, but the main thing is, the movie is boring. It's all shady shit.
And the one thing that I hear most people talking about that they say is the redeeming quality of the film is the gore.
Yeah.
Which, if you like the gore in Hostel, you'll probably like this, because that's exactly what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I didn't really think the gore was good in it. I mean, it was just... To me, it was just using that dark brown look to its advantage. Like, you didn't really see any... Was there any graphic violence in the movie that you really saw other than maybe Leatherface cutting the guy's legs off?
That's the main one I was thinking about.
Most of the other stuff you don't really see, at least clearly. Like, you know, there's parts where he cuts one of the boyfriend's skin off.
Mm-hmm.
But that looked really fake, I thought. And when he what was really hilarious too is you show how Leatherface gets his mask, or it shows how he gets his mask.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, they didn't realize that that was Gunnar Hansen's hair in the original.
Uh-huh.
Because in this one, Thomas Hewitt, Leatherface, whatever, skins the guy's entire head and takes the hair and everything else with it and just wears that.
Another.
Nobody could ever do that. Anyway.
Another useless subplot in this film, aside from, there's actually two that I can think of that I could absolutely not figure out what the hell's going on or why they included it. Number one was is that apparently Leatherface was in self-mutilation, which is why he made himself like a real leather mask before he actually started wearing people's skin.
Yeah.
Which completely kills like the concept of the first one, that he was just a crazy inbred motherfucker. Mm-hmm. That, you know, didn't like the sight of his own face, so he wore a mask for other people. Yeah. So he could be somebody else.
I can't tell you enough, though, how bad the, if you're going to tell a backstory on Leatherface, how bad they did.
Yeah.
The job. I mean, it's totally fucking generic. I mean, there's nothing to it.
And the second thing was another thing too about the movie is Jordana Brewster is only in it probably less than actually Bernarski.
She barely talks too.
Like 5 minutes, I'd say at the most, but just creeping around the background the whole time of the movie.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is she meets up with one of the biker's boyfriends and tries to get him to stop Leatherface. And this is one of the most useless parts of any movie I've ever seen. Basically, the guy runs into the house and puts a gun to like Arlie Ermey's head and tries to get him.
After, and you got to remember, yeah. After she already told him that he killed
her or his girlfriend.
His girlfriend shot her.
So he's like, I'm going to find my girlfriend after she already told him that. So he runs into the house. And he's asking everybody, like, with guns to their heads, where his girlfriend's at.
Yeah.
It's just, and he's killed within, like, 2 minutes. So there's shit like that. Yeah. Like, he sends them all.
I mean, even though we badmouth all these movies, I was actually hoping this one would be good, you know. Because there's so many bad movies that's out there. And unfortunately, in this case, this is probably, I know there's a lot of bad movies that came out this year, but as far as the stuff that I've seen, this is the worst movie I've seen this year, pretty sure.
It reminded me so much of Hostel. I don't know what it is. I think they just basically stole the whole torture, gore concept.
The film was around, it's not even 90 minutes, I don't think, and it felt like it was in there for over 2 hours.
I just wanted to leave. Like, from the first 30 minutes, I knew it was going to be horrible, and I wanted to get the hell out of there, but same effect Hostel had on me when I was watching it. I just knew it wasn't going to get any better.
One thing I wanted to talk about, too, while we're...
Let's talk about the film stock, by the way.
Yeah, the...
Oh, Jesus.
It's pretty much the same as the original beginning, or not the beginning, but the original remake.
It's...
I just said original remake. That's
good. Yeah. It's that Lionsgate-looking...
Saw.
Yeah.
Hostel.
Like, all those films that look really, really dark and brown and have that grainy feel, trying to make it look like it's the 60s and 70s and stuff. It really just comes across looking like fucking MTV-ish kind of
crap. Yeah, it does.
Crap.
It looks like a Nickelback video.
It does.
I think Scott Perry was talking about this last week. And I know it's going to happen eventually. There's going to be a movie. If you've seen the Grindhouse trailer, I don't even know if you can see it now. I think YouTube took it off. You know, they have it look, it's that really grainy 70s drive-in look. And it would seem to me that that would work a shitload better than what they're doing with these.
It can't be that hard to find a 16mm camera, people. Yeah. I swear to God it can't.
And you know, there's all kinds of filters out there that, you know.
I mean, just find a camera that, I'm sure they've got cameras that they used in the 70s, like, from those films.
I don't know if it's
the same kind of model.
Cameras or the film stock is the hard thing.
Either way, I'm sure they still got both of those things. It's not that hard to find. I don't know why it is that they want to, like, make things more difficult on themselves by making a film with using the regular kind of film stock they use and then making it look like that through post-production.
I've got to say to Jonathan Liebesman, horrible camera work there. There's no, here's the thing. I always thought about Texas Chainsaw, and there's a lot of, you know, horrific, violent stuff in there, too. But the original Texas Chainsaw was, And it's actually in, I think a print of it is in the Museum of Modern Art. You know, it's an artistic freaking movie. I mean, you've got some creative shots in there. And it seems like they just don't care about that. For some reason, the people that remade these movies thought that Texas Chainsaw Massacre was one of the goriest movies of all time, and that's what they wanted. They wanted to go back and show a ton of gore and not really have anything else.
And a lot of people bought into that, too, though. A lot of people really thought this movie was great because of the gore.
Yeah. Although I don't really hold them in high regard at all for thinking. You ought to be ashamed of yourself if you thought this movie was good.
The first thing that came to my mind after we got done watching this film was, I don't think that any other film that I've ever seen, whether it be a remake or anything else, disgraced the original more than this film.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's the main thing I was thinking. I wasn't thinking about the gore. I was just thinking about how it is that we've come to this point where original films like The Texas Chainsaw Massacre can be just completely made obsolete by these fucking prequels and remakes, by these guys that direct J-Lo videos on their off time.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is that there's a select number of these movies that came out around that time. To me, they're untouchable. You know. You can't expect anything but worse from these remakes, like the remake of Halloween. I'm hopeful that Rob Zombie will do a good job with it. But you can't expect it to be half of what the original was. And you got all these people out there, and
I don't expect it. I don't expect it to be anything except entertaining.
Yeah.
That's all I care about.
You've got these people out there, and I believe the Butcher mentioned this when we had him on, I think it was a roundtable back in June. You know, he says something like he doesn't look at the remakes as the original.
Yeah,
he looks at them as separate movies.
Yeah, he said you can't look at the films like as a part of the original. You have to look at them completely differently, which is fucking retarded.
I can't do that.
It's a stupid concept because you want it like it's like I said before to him. I think you can't have it both ways. You can't capitalize on the name of the film and want your money that way, and then say you got to go into it looking at it like it's not a part of that original film.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You can, but you'd be like one of the dumbest sons of bitches I know.
Because that's the whole reason
they're
making it.
That's why they're
movie.
Making it, yeah. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. They want you to come in and spend your money and suspend all disbelief about, you know, that the film has anything to do with the original film, but yet they want to use the title to get you in there to begin with. No.
But beyond that.
No.
Even, you know, they're ripping on, everybody knows that they're using the name, and that's all they've got. You know, and we like some remakes, but this one is just bad.
You know, it's so bad, we devoted a show to it.
Yeah.
That should tell you something.
And we need to talk about something, too, that we was talking about on the way back from watching the movie, is the backlash that all these movies, and it's going to happen sooner or later. I don't know if it's starting now, which I'm thinking it is a little bit, because, you know, the opening weekend on The Beginning was not half of what the original remake was. And you've got the movie Grudge, which is a remake, and now they've got the sequel to that remake coming out. And you've also got Black Christmas, which is another remake that's coming out in December.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty soon even the most common moviegoer is going to realize that Hollywood really don't have any ideas, and they're just, you know, trying to bank on something that they've already done 20, 30 years ago.
Well, the thing about it to me is, and it made me, this is the first movie where I've ever been watching it and seriously thought to myself, this has got to be the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Because it just seems to me that there has to come a point in time where most people that go to these remakes realize that since they're a remake, they have a good story already built in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They already have a fan base and everything else like that. But most people are going to start to realize when they start watching movies like this, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning, that it's not entertaining. And you don't go to a movie just to sit around and either be bored shitless like I was during this movie, or just to sit there and waste your time. You go to be entertained or to be taken into a story, kind of escape with a story. There's no story in these films, and there's no entertainment in watching just a bunch of bullshit characters that nobody cares about and torture.
Well, that's the thing. They're just using the gore, and they think that's all people care about. And evidently, well,
they're taking it to the basic lowest common denominator, which is gore. That is like the thing that most horror fans talk
and
about.
And usually, you know, with us, it works. We love gore. But the thing is, these mainstream movies, they're coming out now, the gore in these movies, I just can't explain it. It just looks like freaking chili or something. It looks bad.
Yeah, it is kind of sad to me that they've got all this new equipment and all this money to do these, to do the gore and FX shots in these films, and it comes across looking as hacked as this.
Gore in a mainstream movie is not going to win anything over me, because that's the thing. It's mainstream. It's not going to be that gory anyway. So
yeah, just the days of Dawn of the Dead and shit like that are completely over. You're not going to have that kind of stuff anymore. This movie, I'll give it credit because it did show at least one complete whole shot of somebody getting their legs chopped off, and at least it did stay on that shot. But other than that, I don't
know. Nothing redeeming.
Yeah, there's nothing.
I would avoid it. I would actually recommend all of the movies that we're going to review a little bit later more than this movie. Definitely.
Shit, I'd recommend watching reruns of Golden Girls more than this movie.
So anyway, that is our assessment of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning. John Fleavesman, you still suck ass.
Yeah. Sorry, but we were right.
Yeah. So up next, we got fan mail, and we got some DVD reviews to get to, and a lot more creamy horror goodness here at Deadbit.com.
Halloween. Newsweek magazine calls it a superb exercise in the art of suspense, the most frightening flick in years. Halloween. The Chicago Sun-Times says it's so scary, I would compare it to Psycho. It's the kind of picture, says the Chicago Tribune, that forces you to sleep with the lights on. A masterpiece, says New York's New Times. Halloween, from Compass International, rated R.
This is the fan mail section of the show, but before we get to that, talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing next week on our show.
We don't really know.
Yeah, we don't have an idea.
All right, here's what I want to say, and if this comes true or not, don't kill me. We're going to try to have someone, at least one person, from the Halloween franchise next week. I know we've never talked to anyone from any Halloween film. That's one oddity among us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try to do that next week. If it doesn't happen, don't hate us. But that's what we're going to try to do.
Yeah, don't play a hate.
Yeah.
But
we'll get E-Dick on you.
Yeah, if it works out the way that we plan it to, then I think everybody, we can both agree that everybody will enjoy next week's show.
And I think here in a few weeks, we'll possibly have one of our bigger guests ever if things go as planned. That's all I'll say. You know, we've had a commitment given to us. So.
Yeah, we really shouldn't even be saying this because I've had a bunch of fucking commitments given to me.
That's true.
And it just doesn't work out.
Anyway, though, that's that. And also, we must say that this Tuesday is the final day to vote. We're closing the polls at midnight on Tuesday for the big-ass Halloween bash where you can vote, my friends.
Five different films. Here's the deal. Whatever film wins, CK and I will be doing a commentary, fan commentary.
On Halloween.
Yeah, over top of the film. So here's the five films that you got to choose from. Got Troll 2, which I believe is in second place right now.
Second or third.
Yeah. You got Halloween, the original.
Mm-hmm.
You got Silent Night, Deadly Night 2. Mm-hmm. You got Burial Ground. And you got our overwhelming leader at this point, Cabin Fever.
And I'm begging folks, cast your vote. Please, you know, outvote Cabin Fever, because I don't know what I'll do if I have to watch that movie again.
Yeah, I don't think either one of us has watched that movie since we saw it in theaters.
Don't have.
So that'll be fun, though. It'll be a good experience. I'm sure we won't hate it quite as much as we did the first time.
I don't know about that.
Probably hate it more.
Also, though, check out the DeadPit.com store. Buy your T-shirt if you haven't yet.
Yeah, and also, check out the DeadPit.com model, Lennox Miller.
Yeah. She is freaking gorgeous, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
You can check her out at LennoxMiller.com for more luscious pics.
And I was really hurt by the comment somebody made that she was way too attractive to be on Deadpit. That's not nice.
Yeah.
She's part of the Deadpool family
now. You
don't
find me and Uncle Bill attractive.
Yeah. I think a lot of people do. They just don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
So let's get on.
Moist.
Let's get on with the fan mail, but look forward to the Halloween show next week. We'll try to put something together, no matter what. Okay.
Something really quick here from Runk Russell, who wants to know what we think of My Bloody Valentine.
Well, how amazing and ironic that you should mention this, because I just bought My Bloody Valentine from Walmart in the 488 special.
Right. My Bloody Valentine is actually the best Canadian slasher film I've ever seen.
I've only seen this movie one time, and it was actually because you had it and
right.
just recently bought it. But from what I remember of it, I think it was, to me, a pretty decent slasher. I mean, I'll be able to tell you more about it when I watch it again here shortly.
The Ballad of Harry Warden. You got to love it, because all these slashers from that era had a closing song. And whether it be Beware the Madman Mars, or, you know, Don't Go in the Woods, or, you know, The Ballad of Harry Warden.
Mm-hmm.
There's tons of them out there. And I always loved that in slashers of that time period. If I ever did a slasher movie, I would definitely have to have a song, you know, based on it. Just to fall in that category. I love that. I think it's super.
And it's a lost, you know, a lost concept. People don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, people don't do shit with scores anymore anyway. They don't even know.
It makes me mad. There's always like a rock song at the end of a movie now or something.
Yeah, that's kind of funny too, because speaking of that and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Beginning, they had like all, it was all shit. Like,
yeah, songs. I guess we could talk about the exact ending too. They felt the need to get John Larroquette back again.
Yeah, as if anybody know who the hell that was.
Nobody gives a shit. I mean, I'm guessing Michael Bay was probably like, oh, God, that's amazing. We could get him to another film.
Yeah, actually, what he's probably thinking to himself, here's what we can do to actually please the fans that are going to be so pissed off that they're fans of the original movie when they see this movie. At the end, we'll get John Larroquette in. That'll make it seem official.
Michael Bay's, yeah, we could get him. He would be great.
Oh, God. Stupid asses. Hey, Michael Bay, thank you. Okay, here we go. Next question. I've noticed that the popularity of horror movies, especially uber-violent horror movies, seems to ebb and flow with the political climate. The more conservative the White House, i.e. the Reagan's 80s and the current Bush administration, the more popular horror movies seem to get. On the flip side, the Clinton years were great for this country, but ass-tastic for horror films.
Fantastic.
Do you guys see a connection here, or have I finally taken too many magic mushrooms?
I don't think there's a connection, honestly.
Well, I don't know. I think there kind of is, to be honest. It seems to me that if people are generally, like, happy and the economy is good, which it was with Clinton and not so much with Bush, that it just kind of breeds this feeling that you don't really need these dark horror films. But in periods of time when you have people like Bush running the country and there's terrorism going on and shit, and just people are always nervous and scared shitless, you kind of want to, like, you have these directors that present all these fears and horror movies. I kind of think that's what's happened.
What if you look back in the great movies that came out in the 70s?
Right around Vietnam.
Yeah. But, I mean, people could argue, though, that this is probably, as far as, it's not as bad as Vietnam, but, I mean, this time is probably one of the worst times in the world. As a whole, you know, there's shit going on everywhere, like freaking the North Korea nuclear bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learn all this shit from Fox News. I really don't give a shit. But
it's fair and balanced. That's why he watches it.
Yeah, it's fair and balanced. And Greta Van Susteren's on there. And Nancy Grace is on Headline News.
Oh, is she?
And Nancy Grace is fucking sexy as hell. Lord, I don't know what it is.
I don't either.
But Fox News has Lori Doe on there. She's pretty hot.
Yeah, Lori Doe is hot. Who's the bitch that talks like, hey guys, listen,
that's
we're going
Rita
live.
Rita Cosby.
Yeah. Anyway.
She's been deep throating too long.
Point being is, I think that because, like, people search out movies like this and want to see movies like this because they really want to escape from the true life, which is even scarier than these movies. At the time right now, when all these films are coming out, people are scared shitless that you're either going to get nuked or we're going to go into Iraq and get killed. So, yeah, it's kind of like an escape that these people come up with.
I think some of it, too, is maybe that there's something with the filmmakers that they don't really have any sort of influence to come up with something violent or, you know, just sadistic shit. Like, I'm pretty sure the Saw movies maybe influenced on the Al-Qaeda and all that crap that was going on. Like,
yeah.
They're capturing the...
Generally speaking, when people TV are people, really, yeah. really, like, skeptical of a government's motives, which they really are right now with Bush and were back when Nixon was going, but not so much with Clinton because, you know, Clinton just got...
I don't think it's just the people. I think it's a lot of things that lead to that, not just the...
Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that if you have a government that people don't trust a lot, you generally get a lot of films like this because not just... The directors make films, but people search out films like this because they're looking to find something to kind of explain the way they're feeling about terrorism and all this other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty amazing, though, the amount of hatred that there is for George W. Bush. Like,
no,
I really
it's not amazing to me.
I don't really get... Yeah, but like, there's people that actually think that he was behind 9/11.
Now, that is silly. That's silly as hell.
I mean, that's think of how crazy that is. Also, though, I think Thorne mentioned... So you go read that other part of
the. I don't think there's any other part of the question.
He had a P.S. on there.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, P.S. Please tell me that the big ass on your homepage doesn't belong to either of you guys. Disturbing, so very disturbing.
I'll never tell.
You know something from.
Disturbing.
Scott Goldberg. He just wanted to mention.
Do you want to mention how killer we are?
Yeah. Okay. He said it was a great show this week, and he loved the roundtable and the interview with Lord Victor Miller. And it was very informative, one of the best shows by far. Keep up the great work. And I want to say thanks for the comments, but the show was difficult to put together, as we mentioned on our MySpace show earlier this week. We probably emailed and called at least 10, 15 different people, try to get them on the show.
I want people to know, and you probably will find this out very, very soon, we really try hard to book people on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't make people do the show. That's the thing. I can't hold a gun to somebody's head, although some people I'd like to hold a gun to their head. But you just can't do it. You know, I can't make people come on the show. And a lot of times, the thing that makes me the most mad is people will agree to do the show, and then they'll send you, you know, different confirmations and stuff, and then just you'll never hear from them again.
You know you're always in trouble if they don't want to give you out a number to call them. They'll say, I'll call you. And you can sort of understand that people probably want privacy, I can understand that, but...
Just tell that in the beginning, though.
Yeah.
Don't dick around and act like you're going to do it. That just doesn't make any sense. Okay, this comes to us from Adam Armstrong. He says, "Hey, guys. This Friday the 13th, I got to enjoy a truly unique movie-going experience. I got to see the 1966 Hammer classic, The Plague of the Zombies, which is a film set in Cornwall and concerning Cornish zombie in tin miners." Really? In an actual Cornish cave, the rum store at, God, I don't even want to know what that is to be exact. It was a great night and everyone seemed to really dig it. Even a few people got into the spirit and dressed as zombies. It's definitely one of the most interesting movie-going experiences I've ever had. So anyway, I'd be interested to know if you guys have had any really memorable, interesting, or just plain unique horror movie-going experiences. Yeah. I can think of two. I don't know. What do you got?
I don't know. What do you got?
The two that come to like movie-going experiences right off the top of my head, and I mentioned one of them before, though, was going to see Land of the Dead with my dad because he introduced me to Dawn of the Dead. It was kind of a weird, like, circular thing. The other one was watching that Curse of the Maya with the director, David Heavner, sitting, like, about 10 feet behind us. I would say it was a pretty unique experience to watch any film where the director can hear what you're saying. And know if you like it's very,
you don't know how to react.
Yeah, it's very disturbing to try to have to do that.
One I can remember in particular was when we saw Jason Goes to Hell at Strand Theater down here. It was a weird, I actually think I talked about this before. A friend of mine and I were going to the second showing. I think it was the 9 o'clock showing. As it turns out, the 7 o'clock showing, they had some sort of mishap in the theater, and they couldn't show it. So, we go in there, and we find, I'm just going to mention their names, you know who they are, Freddie Newsome and McGee. We find them in there.
Dynamic dick asses.
Okay. And it's basically a full house, because you've got two sets of people going to see one movie. I mean, it was the 7 o'clock show and the 9 o'clock show combined.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a lot of fun. I mean, it's I don't really like Jason Goes to Hell, but the crowd, I think, helped the movie, and it was just a fun experience to be around, like, a bunch of, we were, like, 13 years old at the time, be around, a bunch of friends just goofing off, and I think Freddie was actually, like, throwing shit at people. And
sure he was. So
it was an enjoyable experience for
I'll tell you another
young
one.
Adolescents.
Another one that is not really a movie-going experience, as in we didn't go to the theaters, but the first year we actually had the Halloween Film Fest
right.
was pretty good, just because we never really done anything like that before.
Probably 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty awesome to actually just sit down. It was right around the time DVDs were starting to really come in and watch all these films that you wanted to see for so long all together.
DVDs done so much for the genre because there were so many of these movies that you really couldn't see before that's now readily available.
Which, by the way, I don't know if people know this, but we do have these Halloween Film Fests every year. We have had for years now.
Yeah.
Where we just get a couple of friends together and watch a shitload of horror films.
I guess we're going to do that on Halloween night. It's the last one we're going to do.
Yeah.
So, it'll be an experience, to say the least.
Okay, what else we got?
We got something from Invictus X, who was mentioning that he was there at the Fright Night convention and met us. And he felt the same way about the DJ guy and the pool dude. That stuff was just plain silly and not needed for a horror con.
Uh-huh.
Do you think you guys might have pool with all your contacts through the radio show and getting some big names there for the coming year? Also, who would you want to see at the Fright Night Film Fest next year?
Honestly, honest to God, most people that do our show, and this is just because we're an independent horror show, don't even remember doing the show. So, no, we don't have big pool contacts. There's like maybe three or four people I can think of who actually, after we interviewed them, continued to listen to the show on a regular basis.
Right.
So I don't think we have any really big pool. But there are certain people we
I'm
can.
I'm thinking, though, what he's mentioned is if we could give contact info.
Yeah, we've got tons of people like that because that's what we've been doing with our time and shit for the last,
10 months?
Yeah, literally. So, if we were going to put together the festival, who would we...
Okay. All right, if you're going to put it together as a fan...
I think we talked about this before.
Or as me and you, I believe. I don't know if we ever mentioned on the show.
Yeah.
Okay, here's what you have to do to have a successful convention. And everybody out there, take notes if you want to know. You have to have at least one big star that everyone knows, okay? In this case, it would be, unfortunately, Bruce Campbell or Robert Englund. Or George Romero, somebody like that. You got to have their likeness plastered all over every newspaper in the area to get people there. Now, as long as you have one big name and maybe a couple of smaller names that aren't going to cost you as much, you'll get a decent-sized crowd anywhere, I think. As long as you, not anywhere, not in Prestonsburg, but I mean...
The big trend right now that's
large city
that seems to draw people into conventions, but I don't think you can do this unless you have a really large budget, is the reunion trend, where you get together a group of people that have all been part of one movie. You know, you see that a lot with Nightmare on Elm Street 3. You see it a lot with Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Just different films like that, that they always run this convention gauntlet.
And I think the problem he had with Fright Night Film Fest this past year...
I don't think that would work for Louisville, though, because I don't think enough people know that much about horror that a reunion concert
I think
convention
it worked
would
better
matter.
Than I thought it would for Gunnar Hansen, because he was basically the big name draw on the show. And we got to be fair, too. It is a film fest more than a horror con, I guess.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, you have to have guests to get people to show up, regardless. There's not a lot of horror film festivals out there that doesn't have any guests at all because, they probably wouldn't do that well.
Yeah, I would recommend almost exactly the same thing as what you said, though. Use most of your budget trying to secure one really big name guy, whether it be Robert Englund or, I guess Romero. People that do the circuits a lot, you'll know.
Bruce Campbell, you could probably get him.
He usually only does circuit by when he's got a book or some bullshit to promote.
He's still got, I think, the paperback of whatever last one was.
Yeah, but you want to get at least one huge guy like that that people like. I think Roddy Piper's doing a bunch of them right now.
Right.
Plus, where he's a wrestler, and Louisville's pretty big on
that would
wrestling.
Be a good idea.
Be, yeah.
The thing with Gunnar Hansen is, though, like, a lot of people know Leatherface and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Nobody knows Gunnar Hansen by Gunnar Hansen, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you was going to advertise it, it would be better if you had just a picture of Leatherface on there and say, you know, Leatherface, Gunnar Hansen will be there.
So after you're done with that, though, you spend the remaining part of your budget and just get, here's what I would do, just get a bunch of hot women.
Yeah.
Like Scream Queens.
Yeah.
Just fill that place up. Because that's mostly what a lot of these smaller conventions do. They get a bunch of Scream Queens and one.
And you got to secure enough people that are willing to pay their way there. And all you got to do is pay maybe their hotel room or something. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are willing to do that. So, you know, it'd help you if you do that.
The key, though, to any horror convention, in my opinion, is get people to stay there once you get them there. Because once they get the shit signed, you don't want them to leave.
Right. You want to have a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's what we would do. And as far as a fan goes, I would love to meet Robert Englund. And that's probably one on top of my list as far as people that do conventions regularly.
Mm-hmm. If you look at Flashback Weekend and what they're planning on doing, I know they've already booked Robert Englund and Heather Langenkamp. And that alone would make me want to go to that convention.
Yeah.
Next question. From Brother D, what should I dress up for Halloween? Should I dress up as for Halloween?
Dress up as Chuck Norris, Texas Ranger.
That took mine. I don't know. Dress up as a huge gaping vagina. And you can get
Bruce
you some,
Campbell.
Yeah, you can get you some mayonnaise. It'll come out of it, and it'll be great.
Oh, God. That's nasty.
Thank you.
Dark Star said, I just want to kiss your asses a little bit. Okay. What a great job you guys are doing on the show. I noticed while I was watching the trailer prior to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre prequel, there's an abundance of horror coming out from the major studios this year. What movies are you two looking forward to seeing? Okay. I'm not looking forward to seeing any of them.
No, because they're all remakes, and I really don't ever look forward to seeing... Grindhouse.
That's
2007,
year,
though. Yeah. Nothing, I guess. Nothing
we
coming
be
out.
We gotta be honest.
Yeah.
What is left? Like Saw 3.
And Black Christmas.
Black Christmas. That stupid movie with Sarah Michelle Gellar. What was that before? It was
The Return or something like that. Something bullshit like that.
Bad.
I don't even remember the name of it now, thank God. But I don't ever really honestly look forward, other than making fun of them, to remakes.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to any of them. Although I'm sure we'll see Black Christmas and Saw 3 and... What else is coming out?
I know we'll definitely see Saw 3 just because we have to complete the trilogy.
It'll be on down here in Prestonsburg, so.
Okay, this next one is another one from Ron Russell. It says, thought you guys might enjoy something like this. Okay, dream scenario for you two. Say someone owned a drive-in theater and wanted to program it for the month of October. They come to you two and say, we need double features every Friday night for 4 weeks. Jesus. What are your picks? Double features every Friday night for 4 weeks. Okay, first one.
It's not that difficult, actually. You could have nights. You could have 70s night, 80s night. I don't think I can pick anything from 90s night.
Yeah, zombie night or exploitation night. You could even have, like, somebody put together one recently where they had a double feature, Friday 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street, which I thought was a good idea. Something like that.
Okay, night one. Or first week one, I guess. Carrie. And Phantasm.
That's the shit you won't see in the theater.
Well, that's true. But, you know, I think that would do well, actually. Because, first of all, Carrie is a pretty popular film.
If I was going to book one, I would probably put Halloween and Halloween 4 together. Just because, the first Halloween's a no-brainer.
But Halloween and Halloween 2.
Yeah, but see, it is a continuation, but I think... Halloween 4 is the beginning of the real slasher Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Week 2 for me would be Fred Decker night with Night of the Creeps and the Monster Squad.
Yeah. I'm thinking along the lines of I'd probably show Dawn and Day of the Dead back to back. Or Night and Dawn of the Dead. Doesn't really matter. Either one of those would work effectively.
Okay. Week 3 for me, I would have to go with The Beyond, Lucio Fulci. And let's pick a really good Argento one. How about opera?
Okay.
Atmospheric Italian giallo film. And I'm just picking movies I want to see. I don't care if I do well. Fuck them.
Okay, then in that regard, I would probably pick the two from the two biggest franchises, the two best films that I would want to see in a theater, which would be Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and Friday the 13th Part 5 together.
I was going to say Friday the 13th Part 5 along with Just Before Dawn. Something different.
So I guess for the actual like Halloween... See, that's the thing about Halloween. Everybody shows Halloween on Halloween.
Yeah.
So that's kind of overdone.
You could have trick-or-treat on Halloween.
Yeah. Something like that would be fucking hilarious to have, like, you know, bizarre Halloween films, like Pumpkinhead and Trick-or-Treat.
Yeah. Although, and I think, like, isn't Pumpkinhead 3 coming on soon?
It is, yeah. It's supposed to be... I think we got something about that recently.
Anyway, though, that's that. I would love the opportunity to do that. We don't even have a drive-in anywhere near here, though, so...
Yeah, and if we did get the chance, we'd probably take it more seriously. here we go. It says, there's more parts to the question. It says, also, just as a show idea, how about every week you guys start doing the stick a dick in your mouth and smile award to a whore fuck-up of the week, someone that makes a dumb comment or a shitty movie was made, that released, etc.
So you couldn't just pick one, though, because there's so many.
We can't do that right now because you don't have the stick a dick in your mouth voice yet.
Well, my voice is still recovering, but I think that I can try it. You want to try it?
All right. Who's fucked up this week?
Jonathan Liebesman. How about that?
That's a good point. So this one, I guess, goes out to Jonathan Liebesman.
Stick a dick in your mouth and smile. Stick a dick in your mouth and smile. Stick a dick in your mouth and smile.
Goes out to Jonathan Liebesman.
Okay.
Something from Runk Russell of Blood Type Online, which is a killer website.
BloodTypeOnline.com?
Yeah.
That site fucking rules.
Other than BloodTypeOnline.com and BastardsOfHorror.com, we love BastardsOfHorror.com too.
That site kicks my nuts
in. Moist. What are some of your favorite websites? And I just wanted to say thanks for my Dead Pit shirt. It's well worth the $20, and your show is worth the 2 hours every week. Well, I certainly hope so, sir. Thanks for the plug a few weeks ago, and I pray each night that you two get the opportunity to plug every Scream Queen.
And I'm assuming that by plug every Scream Queen, you mean mention every Scream Queen?
Right.
That's what he's talking about.
Such as Lennox Miller.
Yeah.
LennoxMiller.com.
I honestly hope we get the opportunity to plug a lot of Scream Queens, too.
Melantha Blackthorne is another one I'd like to plug
plug
her. MelanthaBlackthorne.com.
I'll plug the hell out of hers. Melantha Blackthorne.
Tiffany Shepis is another one. I'd love to plug her right now.
Tiffany/Shepis.com.
She needs to be plugged really hard. TiffanyShepis.com.
There's plugs all over this place.
So anyway, that is that. 5 hours.
Okay, so what are our favorite websites? We never did get to that, aside from...
Well, we mentioned a few. Let's see. I don't go on a lot of websites that's horror-related. I go on a lot of wrestling sites. So I guess I can mention WrestlingObserver.com is what I go to.
Yeah, I like CumDumpsters.com. That's a good one. SkankySluts.com. And
GregoryDark.com. White Bum Buster.
Yeah. Those are good ones.
All right, horror sites. HorrorDVDs.com. I got to freaking mention them because that's pretty much the only site I still go to and look on and stuff. So
for forums, yeah, that probably would be the
best. Well, yeah, but I mean, it's a great group of fans that post there and stuff, and that makes the site.
I find myself, honestly, as far as just going on regular horror sites, going on Air on the Head probably more than any of the rest of them.
GoreZone is pretty good, too.
Uh-huh. I mean, it is.
You know, it's a... they just combine news from everywhere and put the day's best news stories, so...
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, those are some of our favorite sites, I guess.
Who could? All right.
Let's see what we got here. Okay, I'll figure out who this is for after I read it because it's long. It says, hey, boys, the only problem I had with the Friday the 13th show, I hope you keep doing the Merry Friday the 13th, was the lack of your trademark theme song. What gives? I expected to hear it kick in after the soundbite from the movie, and then I was treated to a reimagining of the theme, which, by the way, the reimagining of the theme was just the theme music from part 3.
Yeah.
It was 3D. So, I hope that this was just a one-time thing. It was seeing the... I'm sorry. It was like... I suppose he's trying to say it was like seeing the shower scene in Psycho. and instead of hearing shrieking violins, hearing a hillbilly rock song. I thought Fangoria Radio was interfering for a second. Anyway, like you guys, I have a soft spot for horror anthology movies like Creepshow, The Offspring, Twilight Zone, the movie, Necronomicon, Two Evil Eyes, etc. I was wondering what individual stories from any horror anthology film stand out to each of you as being the best and the worst. Personally, I've always loved The Raft from Creepshow 2 and hated all the stories from Tales from the Hood about equally, since I've forgotten them all. That's from Indie Phantom.
True. The Raft in Creepshow 2 is really awesome. One I remember, though, is... I cannot remember the name of the actual tale, but it's from the original Creepshow. Geordie Verrill.
The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill.
Yeah, Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill or whatever. I just couldn't help but crack up at that shit.
Stephen King.
Stephen King, that's like one of his only major acting roles, I guess. And I just remember watching it as a kid and laughing my ass off. And another thing I remember, too, is he's watching wrestling.
Yeah, he is.
You know, after he finds the meteor and gets the meteor shit on him. Whatever.
Yeah, I've always liked horror anthologies, too. The original, the one I remember the most out of all of them for some reason, the original Tales from the Crypt movie, which was in the 70s. I think it was released by Asylum. Or it was either Asylum or Hammer. I can't remember which one.
Amicus.
Yeah, Amicus or Hammer. There was one of the stories in it where, and I'm sure it had a title, but I don't remember it. There was a guy that owned a school for the blind, and he was a real dickhead and stuff, and he treated all the patients in it really bad. And at the end of it, they all spend time building this huge labyrinth that he has to go through, and it's all filled with razors that are jammed into the wall. And at the end of it, I don't want to spoil it for anybody because people really need to see this. But at the end of it, there's this room that he opens up, and what's in that room is just killer. As far as what he has to do to get out of there. So that was always one of my favorites. As far as the mainstream ones, I was always really, really fond of the Father's Day episode of Creepshow.
Another one I really liked, The Offspring, the one with Klugulger.
Yeah, that was a creepy one, actually. Yeah. That guy plays creepy better than anybody I've ever seen.
Anyway, though, The Offspring is one that a lot of people probably haven't seen. So that was.
So what do you think of some of the worst that you can remember?
Okay, one I really hated, and for some reason a lot of people like it, is also actually in Creepshow. It's the last one in Creepshow.
I never liked that one either. They're creeping up on you.
Yeah, with what was the guy's name? He was a legendary actor. I can't remember his name now.
I can't remember his name either.
Anyway, he was the star in it, and he was basically obsessive compulsive about things being clean.
Mm-hmm.
And cockroaches are the stars of the movie, and I don't know. Had some decent effects in it, I guess, but I just never did like that. To me, it didn't fit in the movie, I didn't think.
I never liked the old Chief Woodenhead one from part two that
I liked
much.
That one. I didn't like the one, I did like that one too, but it was the worst one of the series, the Hitchhiker one.
I didn't think that was the worst one of the series at all, but I would say that out of that movie, out of Creepshow 2, the worst one for me was the Woodenhead one. And I don't know why. I know a lot of people like the guy in it that was fucking with his hair all the time and stuff, but I just didn't like that episode. And there are actually more that I know we've seen anthologies. We've seen some horrible anthologies, too, the independent anthologies.
It's true.
But I've just forgotten all those.
About the theme, though, I mean, that was the same theme that we used for the original Friday the 13th special, so. I mean, it's nothing new.
Hey, what's next?
El Juan wants to ask, what is your favorite television show that was either straight horror or had horror elements? Well, that's the first question. A couple weeks ago, I probably would have said Tales from the Dark Side. But have you all noticed, lately... Except for the first night of Tales from the Dark Side, pretty much all the episodes have been really, really bad. Every Monday when they have them on Style Hub.
I think that might have been one of those deals where it's just... when we were kids, that was amazing stuff.
Yeah.
But now that we look back on it, it's just not as gratifying as it was then.
So I will say that the new Masters of Horror series is probably, right now, my favorite. I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty solid series last year.
Okay, straight... For straight horror goodness, I would actually say that Tales from the Crypt was my favorite.
Yeah, Tales from the Crypt was pretty killer too.
Yeah, and I still think those hold up pretty well. But for just that had any horror element to it, my favorite would definitely be The X-Files.
Also, an honorable mention of Dark Shadows too, because I really like at least the first couple of seasons of those shows. But they were entertaining.
True that.
What horror or horror-inspired television show would you like to see be made into a movie, sort of like they did with the X-Files movie?
Well, they've done every kind of Tales from the Crypt movie, you can imagine. They've done a Tales from the Dark Side movie.
They've done a Dark Shadows movie.
Yeah. They've done actually two Dark Shadows movies, probably more than that I don't even know about. There's not really much. You want like a Monsters movie?
Yeah. What haven't they done? I mean, all of the bigger horror shows have had a movie adaptation. So I can't think of one, so that's that.
Mm-hmm. I guess that is. Okay, last question comes to us. Well, my last question is from Vampire. It says, if Dead Pit was a TV show, what would have on it? I guess it's what would it have on it?
It would have a bunch of naked women on it dancing around. And like, here's what. They'd be dancing around a bunch of zombies as they were eating some guy. That would be the show.
Gore and titties.
Yeah.
I think that's the combination that we all need.
So that is the fan mail for this week. If you want to send fan mail, you can either email us at deadbit@deadbit.com, post on the message board, and we'll read most of them. Try to get through most of them.
Yeah, we try to read them all.
Yeah. So up next is the final edition of Scott Goldberg's Inside the Forest Hills.
And after that, we'll get to our weekly DVD reviews, which we skipped last week because for our 13th show. Yeah.
Here on
DeadPit.com.
Hello, Scott Goldberg, director of the Forest Hills, and you're listening to Inside the Forest Hills, only here on DeadPit.com. I'm here with Robert Youngren, a very good and talented actor here from Long Island, New York. Robert, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And Robert, tell people about the role of people on the show, who you basically played in the film for the Forest Hills.
Okay, I basically play Samson, and he's a... kind of a fruitcake. I guess he's like insane. He enjoys hacking people up with his sickle, and I guess they eat them. He enjoys bathing in the blood of his victims. Like he uses it as a hair gel. He slicks his hair back. He kind of enjoys the way it feels, the way it smells. He just really enjoys the kill, you know, the hunt, you know. And he just seems to be out of his mind for the most part. You know, he really enjoys the thrill of the hunt more than the actual eating and all that stuff. But it's definitely he's definitely enjoys the hunt.
How'd you prepare for the role of Samson?
Basically, that was a challenging role because I've always played basically cops and dads and you know more or less good guy stuff. And that was my first killer role. So. It was something I always wanted to do. I think everybody fantasizes about being the bad guy. And so for me, we always played, you know, cops and robbers as a kid. And I was a big horror fan. I always watched the horror films. We always went around the house making believe we were the mummy or Frankenstein. So, you know, it was really not really hard for me to get into character, just, you know, having fun with it. I basically had a lot of fun with it.
Now, what was the difference working on other films? Have you ever actually been in any other horror films? And if so, how did they differentiate from being
okay,
a horror
film? I did a film called Dog and Butterfly, which is still in production, and I played this evil stepfather named Arlo, and I basically was very abusive and you know just an evil person. But I didn't kill anybody. I was just you know an abusive stepfather. So. Where it's very condescending and just yelling and screaming and that kind of stuff. So this is a much different role because it's more physical, you know, than actual dialogue. It was very physical, you know, very demanding as far as the running and the jumping and all that stuff.
Now let's get to something that the fans want to hear about. I know there's been a lot of speculation with one of the actors from the Forest Hills. You actually play... a gay killer alongside an actor, Peter Iacillo. What was it like working with him?
Pete is a really talented actor. He's got a great history. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff, and it was an honor to work with him. And you know, he's a really super guy. You know.
Sure. He ended up in a couple of small problems during the filming, as there is in any independent film. You know, that's no budget, low budget.
I don't think
give us
Peter,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, Peter's not used to working guerrilla filmmaking. He's the low, ultra low budget. He's used to more, I guess, more controlled sets, and these were more raw, you know, more or less kind of go. It's almost like playing in your backyard type thing.
Yeah.
So I'm used to doing. I've done many guerrilla films. I've done, you know, a lot of student films where we had no permits and we'd have to hide and seek from the police on the streets of Manhattan.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, shooting in the subway is a no-no. So we'd wait for no one to be around. We'd run down there, shoot the scene, and get out. So, you know, to me, that's not a problem. But I don't think Peter is actually used to that kind of shooting.
You think that really put a damper on his experience on the Forest Hills?
I think overall, you know, when you see the film, I think we had great chemistry, and I think he had a great time. Yeah, you know, there were a few issues that he had. But I think overall, the experience is definitely a positive one.
If you don't mind saying, what were some of the issues that you felt that he had?
Well, there was, again, it was about two gay killers, which we knew about when we signed on, but there was, a simulated sex scene, which really wasn't. It was implied. It really wasn't simulated, but I think he thought it was more like it was going to be a sex scene, and it kind of, like, made him upset.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, I really wasn't thrilled about it either, but, you know, I understand it's simulated. It's not even, it's implied, so it's a whole different thing between implied. So there was a little bit of a problem on set, when the director wanted us to do this specific scene. So what we had to do was improvise, and we were able to get the film done.
Do you feel that without the improvisation, and let's say the if that scene was implied, do you think it would have done the same thing, or do you think it would have been a little bit more raunchier and made the audience more disgusted? I mean, because as a filmmaker, what I'm trying to do is push the envelope, you know, and
right.
And I feel that the sequence was good of what we shot, but I think it could have been a little bit more, you know, of that raunchier, gritty type of feeling. What do you think about that?
Well, again, when I read the script, originally it wasn't, you know, the sex scene, there wasn't any. It was more of a holding hands implied, you really didn't know type thing. So I think, you know, I think it got grittier as it went. I think... Yeah, you know, I don't really think you needed to do that. I mean, listen, if you want to push the envelope, you can always do that.
Yeah.
But I think what we did works, and you have to wait and see the film. I really think it worked. I think, you know, there was a lot of good eye contact. It was definitely a chemistry between the two characters. You could see it. So you knew it was definitely more than just friends.
Peter has actually, you know, shunned the film and actually has actually taken all of his pictures off of MySpace. I know. And even for me to talk about, it's a little silly since it's all water under the bridge, but the fans really want to know. You know, and you know about it, and you actually work with him. So, why do you feel he? Do you think he was just hurt about the whole thing? Is that like why he just doesn't want to be associated with the film anymore? What's your feelings on that?
I, to be honest with you, I don't understand why he would shun the film. It's a good film. We worked hard on it, and he has not conveyed to me anything negative about the film. You know, or you or anyone else that's part of the project. So I don't, you know, that was all news to me when I read that blog he put out there. I was, you know, really surprised to see that. Now, like I said, I didn't think he was going to do that because I had spoke to him earlier and he seemed fine. So apparently something upset him and he didn't say anything to me about it, except for the fact that he didn't like the part about the gay killers, but we knew that when we signed on for the film. So I don't understand why he would be so upset. And also, we adjusted the scene for him, you know, because there was a lot of tension. If you remember, you were ready to tell us to go home, and I was like, oh, man, we can't do this. We got too much time invested. So I managed to, you know, kind of play mediator and say, well, why don't we do this? And, you know, we could still get it done. And then Peter agreed to it, and then I thought everything was fine. So, you know, I don't understand why there'd be a controversy. I thought we'd be fine. And even I said to him, I said, Peter, this is fine. It's not a big deal. But apparently, I guess to him, it is a big deal. As an actor, I will play, if I have to play a homosexual in a film, I play a homosexual in a film. I have to play a killer, I play a killer. I don't think playing a killer is any worse than playing a homosexual, depending on who you talk to. Now, I mean, what's a better person, a homosexual or a murderer? I mean, you know, so acting is acting, and I, you know, I become the part when I do it, but when I'm done with the part, I don't have any baggage with it.
Yeah, and it was definitely an experience, I'm sure, for everyone, you know, because everyone, it's a learning experience, you know, you learn different types of people and different types of situations, and so actually, just in closing, tell us a little bit about your upcoming projects and what you're going to be working on.
Well, right now I'm going to be, hopefully, there's a few things going on, but I'm not really sure about. I'm actually shooting something this weekend. It's kind of some storybook trailer for this book website. And then All I Want for Halloween. I know that's up and coming, so I'm really looking forward to doing that. And, you know, there's some various projects going on, but they're not set yet, so I don't want to say anything about them.
Sure.
But, but right now, the thing coming up is the All I Want for Halloween, and I'm really looking forward to working on that.
All right, Robert, well, thank you, and I'd like to thank everyone else for taking a listen and taking interest to this whole situation, the whole Forest Hills, and I'd actually like to thank Wes and Aaron from DeadPit.com.
Hi, this is Linnea Quigley, and you are listening to DeadPit.com. It's a scream.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Welcome back to Dead Pit, and this is the review portion of the show.
That's right. If y'all don't know, it's the first time you listen. We do these little reviews every week. We do about 4 reviews a week. And starting off this week is the new 2-disc Ultimate Edition of Tobe Hooper's classic, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original.
And it doesn't get much more ultimate than this, though.
You got a lot of these special editions out there. Have just a little handful of extras. This sumbitch DVD has 2 feature-length documentaries.
Peckerhead sumbitch.
So it's got a lot of extras on it. In addition to those documentaries, though, it's got deleted scenes, commentary tracks, a brand-new commentary track with Marilyn Burns, Paul Partain, Alan Danziger, and Robert A. Burns. 2 of those people are dead.
Mm-hmm.
You got a ton of extras on this, but first and foremost,
let's talk about the transfer, because I know that you're like, you get a hard on anytime anybody brings up transfers.
That's right.
But even I have to admit, and I don't even give a shit about transfers that much, I even have to admit that the transfer in this movie is 10 times better than anything I've ever seen on Laserdisc or the shitty DVDs they've released.
There's a lot of colors that you didn't pick up on before. I mean, it's just like,
you can actually see things in the movie that you've never seen in any other version of the movie because they were too dark or it was too grainy or something. And I know a lot of people bitch about that because they're like, you need to keep the film the way it was and not, you know, restore it and make it as grainy as possible.
It's still grainy.
It's just you can actually make out shapes and colors better than you could in the past versions of the film.
Yeah. We must say, too, that Don May Jr. of Synapse Films did the restoration work. He was the restoration consultant listed on this disc. And I don't know if I've ever seen a movie that benefited more from a remastering than this one. I mean, it's just a lot of them, like, you know, they remastered Night of the Living Dead, and of course it looked better, but, you know, it being black and white, you know, it just doesn't benefit like Texas Chainsaw does. Like, it's, it almost looks like a different film.
Because there's a lot of scenes in this film that I remember from watching the older DVDs where the lighting and stuff the way it was, but there were scenes where they were in the house and you couldn't really make out the stuff that was in the background, like the bones, all that different intricate stuff, like the chairs and stuff that were made out of bones. You can see all that stuff perfectly now, and there's so much more in this film that you pick up on just because of the way it was transferred.
Yeah, and if you're still not convinced by us freaking bragging on this movie like it's the best thing since sliced bread,
which it is.
Yeah. We're going to have a review up on the site that will have comparisons of the Pioneer disc. And believe me, folks, there was only one release of this DVD before the 2-disc Ultimate Edition, and that was the original Pioneer DVD. Now, the disc itself was re-released with new cover art about 3 or 4 times, but it was never remastered from that original release. So we'll have that on there, and as far as the extras in the movie, or in the DVD, we have the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Shocking Truth documentary, which was, I think it was from about 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Danziger was on it. Gunnar Hansen, Ed Neal, Paul Pertain was on that one, Marilyn Burns, really great documentary, and the Flesh Wounds documentary is brand new, I believe, and it takes like, it's like chapters, and each chapter is something different. Like, I know one chapter has Tim Harden from TexasChainsawMassacre.net, and he discusses, you know, while he's at the Texas Chainsaw House, by the way, how he got into Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Basically, he moved there basically because that's where the locations, I think.
Which, by the way, speaking of Tim Harden, that reminds me. If anybody hasn't checked this out yet, there's I don't know if it still airs anymore, but there's an E! True Hollywood Stories of Texas Chainsaw Massacre that's been on E! A bunch of times now. It actually has Tim Harden in it, but it also has all the, well, a lot of the original members of the cast. I think Gunnar Hansen, Ed Neal on there, and talking about how they made the film and all that stuff.
Also, though, I mean, they got one on conventions, a chapter on conventions that covered, I think, it was the Texas Frightmare Convention they had earlier this year, and Cinema Wasteland was another one that they did. And you have the actual doctor that did the makeup for John Dugan.
Mm-hmm.
He was in that. W.E. Barnes.
A lot of people don't know that, but there was no actual makeup effects guy for that whole process. Yeah. The guy was just a... What did he do? He was like a...
He was a plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's really interesting because I've never heard anything from that guy before. And you have one on Gunnar Hansen. It's... I like the Flesh Wounds documentary more than the Shocking Truth, actually. I thought it was interesting. And the one with Ed Neal. Ed Neal is the best impressionist I've ever seen or heard. Because I definitely want to have him on the show at some point to do some impressions. So, you know,
I think
least.
We both like to have him on the show.
Yeah. But very entertaining, I'll say. And you have other extras include... You haven't watched the extras, is why I'm reading this. I just want to say...
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Well, they're not aware of it. Yeah. A tour of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house with Gunnar Hansen. You have, I think it's the same deleted scenes and outtakes that was in the original release. And you also have outtakes from the Shocking Truth documentary. So, okay, if I was going to make a statement on disc of the year so far, horror disc of the year, this is it. You have to own this.
There's two that I think you have to own. The Halloween 25th and then this one.
Yeah. What this is, though, is if Halloween, they did a big restoration of Halloween, which they really don't need to do, and all the extras it was in, 25 Years of Terror,
yep,
in one set. You know, I mean, if you're a Texas Chainsaw fan, you have to own this. I mean, even if you own the past crappy Pioneer release, you got to have it. I mean, anybody that is infatuated with the series Texas Chainsaw movies, this isn't just... We got to say, The Shocking Truth isn't just for the first movie. They go from part 2, 3, and 4. And this was before they did the remake and stuff, so they don't go there. But you learn everything. You actually learn that Bill Moseley, and he got cast from in Texas Chainsaw 2 because he impersonated the hitchhiker.
Which you can tell if you watch it. But didn't he have like a...
He was in a movie, though. Texas Chainsaw Manicure.
Uh-huh.
And impersonating the hitchhiker and that. So a lot of interesting stuff that I didn't know about in those documentaries.
A lot of people ask him, too, if that movie is available. And for some reason, it's not around anymore. The actual Texas Chainsaw Manicure,
yeah,
that he sent to people for that.
They actually have a short clip of it on that. So it has to be around somewhere. Evidently, they don't have the rights.
According to his site, for some reason.
The rights to it probably isn't available, I'm guessing is what he means.
Yeah.
But anyway... To me, that's this is the set of the year so far. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you know, we didn't talk much about the film, but if you haven't seen the film, what the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah, there's no need in discussing the film. I'm sure anybody that's a horror fan has seen it.
So I guess moving on, we'll talk about one that we watched for our past first Halloween,
right,
you know, horror film fest that we had. This one's called Feast, and it's by John Gulager, who is, I believe, Clu Gulager's son. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. After Slither, it takes a lot of balls to try to release a film like this, because Slither didn't do well at all.
No, it didn't.
And this is almost exactly the same type of film. It's one of those, you know, creatures from either, you know, aliens or something from another planet, you know, basically run rampant over a small town. And at the very beginning of it, it starts in a bar. And all these people get together in this bar, and it shows you, like, different profiles of them. The profiles will actually come up on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, it's something I've never seen before.
Almost like a wrestler, like, entrance for a wrestler, and they have the name come up. And
yeah, it shows you, like, it tells you their name, and it says probability that they'll get killed in the movie, and then what is they do and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just really odd, and you get to know all the characters that way. And then all of a sudden, like, about 20 minutes into the film, guy bursts through the doors after you kind of get to know the people that work in the bar and stuff, and Klugeluger is the bartender in the film.
Yeah.
He's actually got a pretty good role. A lot better.
Yeah, I mean, he actually, for somebody that's over 80 years old, does a damn good job, and he still looks pretty good.
And I fucking thought Dwayne Whitaker was great in this movie.
Yeah, Dwayne Whitaker's awesome in that, about any movie you've seen.
Yeah, I don't know why it is, but he was really, really good in this movie. But he kind of plays a scumbag, which I think he plays that role in every character, in every movie he's in. But a guy bursts into the bar, and he's supposed to be the hero, and he's telling people that there's all these creatures out there, and nobody knows, you know, where they came from, but that they killed a bunch of people in this opposite town and stuff.
Of course, everybody thinks he's crazy.
Yeah. So, but then the creatures actually start to attack the bar, and without trying to give too much away about who gets killed and everything, they start to kind of dismantle the place.
Yeah. And it's really not a paint-by-numbers sort of movie like you'd think. I mean, it's hard to figure out who the hero is.
Yeah, because they sort of make joke. So many people a hero in the movie.
They sort of joke about it, actually, that they have so many people in the movie. I would love to see more movies like it because it's... It reminds you of a lot of From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, it reminds you of that because it all takes place in one spot. Yeah. It takes place at this bar.
Location.
Yeah, there's no, like, it's kind of claustrophobic. There's no other sets or anything. It basically all happens at this one place. But there's a lot of really good scenes in it that are kind of, you don't see coming, like people that when they get killed and stuff, and they're really quick. And the creatures in it are fucking amazing. I don't know, like, who designed them. I haven't checked on that or anything, but the creatures in the film... Actually, you know, it's kind of reminiscent of, I guess, Pumpkinhead, or Aliens or something like that, but they just combine the two.
The effects was a little bit like, although it's a completely different movie, sort of, Slither. I mean, they had that some sort of look, feel to it.
Yeah, I just thought they were awesome. Probably some of the best monster, you know, creations that I've seen in a long time.
Not a lot of CGI in it.
No, not a lot at all. There's a lot of gore, too, which is good if you don't have a lot of CG and a lot of gore.
It's just a really fun movie, and it's a perfect movie to watch with a bunch of friends.
Yeah, apparently, by the way, the sole purpose these creatures are trying to mate, because I know there's like this back plot where they keep trying to, like, they're having sex with each other all the time and trying to have sex with, like, the women in the bar and stuff.
Right.
And there's a hilarious scene with that, too. Which I think would probably only be on the unrated version if I was guessing. But, yeah, it's just a great, fun kind of horror comedy that they don't really make anymore at all.
And I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, I would too.
Anybody, you're a gore fan, you're a horror comedy fan, you're going to like it, no doubt. And Klugeluger's in it, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, shit.
But if you want to know some of the features, you got deleted scenes, outtakes, the blood and guts of Gary Tunnicliffe, who is actually the effects guy in it. And Whore Under the Spotlight, The Making of Feast, commentaries by all the filmmakers at Scott 5.1. And if you want to check it out, you can go to feast-movie.com and, you know, check it out that way.
Yeah. So next up, one of your favorite filmmakers or directors, John Scheiben.
Well, he wasn't actually that much of a filmmaker when I liked him. He was more of a writer. That's mostly what he did for the X-Files.
Well, X-Files movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Which... I guess he considered it like a old school slasher, ode to like those sort of movies.
I swear to God, I've seen six movies just like this in the last week. I don't know what the hell it is about these movies. People break down, and somebody like there's some crazy hillbilly inbred motherfucker or some like creepy guy catches them, and ties them down, tortures.
Yeah, similar to Wolf Creek.
Jesus Christ!
Just watch that.
How many damn movies like that are that just came out recently?
I don't know.
Anyway.
This one is they break down. Well, they don't really break down.
No.
He kidnaps this girl's boyfriend as she's going to piss in a rest stop. And evidently, he kills a lot of people around the rest stop area. He must like, you know, watching women shit and piss.
Oh, he does. Don't you remember there's a scene where, like, he's looking in on some woman taking a piss and he starts smelling?
Yeah.
Like, really?
Oh, urine.
Yeah, that's hilarious. A lot of people don't like this movie.
Yeah.
Because, okay, here's the thing.
I can probably see why.
I can, too.
You know, if you're...
Because none of it really makes any sense. Like, in reality, a lot of stuff that happens in this movie would not ever happen. Because, for instance, the scene where her boyfriend first... Okay, they pull up to this rest stop, and the first thing that happens is her boyfriend gets kidnapped, basically, by this guy. And then she has to go around and try to find, you know, what's happened to him and what's going on. The first place she goes to is like this little shed that's kind of like a, I guess it's like a station.
Office.
Yeah, like a ranger station or something. And she breaks into it, and she's not even panicked at all. She's just walking around, going through the drawers and stuff. She gets out a thing of liquor and gets drunk.
Yeah.
She finds a thing of liquor, gets drunk, then gets and starts watching television.
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing's going on. And then she gets on a CB.
That's a kill part, yeah. She gets on a CB and starts talking to some guy. And, yeah, you can guess it's pretty much the killer she's talking to. What does she say? She says, he goes, well, you know, what's your 20?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm at a rest stop in California.
Yeah, and then she goes.
Beside like an old
she goes,
highway.
Yeah, I think it's beside the old highway. And that guy's like, well, we'll get right down there. And then, yeah, stuff like that. Just her whole, her acting in this movie is truly horrible. I can't really even defend it because she doesn't have any of the emotions that you would expect somebody that would be terrified of getting killed would have, you know. Pretty much she's calm or pissed off the whole time.
And that's probably why, you know, you gotta look at movies like this for what they are. I mean, I don't think that anybody, even making this movie meant for it to be a serious, I hope not, at least, for it to be a serious
movie.
That's
what I keep thinking because, okay, throughout the whole rest of the movie, a lot of it doesn't make sense. Like, there's a sheriff that comes up.
Joey Lawrence.
Yeah. And he comes up, and he gets run over, okay, by a truck.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is I'm imagining if I was standing on a street, and a truck was coming at me at full force.
You'd notice?
I would notice it was coming at me, with the headlights on, too, by the way.
He doesn't notice.
He just stands there until it hits him. There's just stuff like that that happens throughout the whole movie. And there's one scene in it where it's kind of a spoiler, but she's asked to shoot him in the head.
Yeah.
And she shoots him once in the head, right directly in the head. And then he jerks back to life real quick.
Shoot me again.
Yeah, says that to her. Scenes like that, you have to burst out laughing. And I swear, though, I think that what they were trying to do is, and either way, I still love this movie for this reason. Either it was a really horrible attempt at a serious movie, or they were actually making fun of all the torture genre type movies.
I'm not really sure what they were doing with it.
But that's the thing. That's the way the best movies to me are made. Like, I'm not even sure to this day if Troll 2 was supposed to be serious, or if it was just a farce.
Yeah.
But it's still a great film, because it doesn't...
That's what I was telling people. They wanted to know, you know, what I thought of the movie, because evidently a lot of people are hating the movie. I thought it was, I described it as laughably bad.
I would describe it as laughably good.
Yeah. Well, it's same thing, laughable. What I mean by that is it's still entertaining, but you watch it and you're like, what the fuck? I mean, there's scenes too, like, where she has visions, evidently the sheriff ends up being just a vision after she shoots him. He disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of that stuff going on. You don't know what the hell is what, but
it didn't matter to me though because I actually, for some reason, cared about what was going to happen. I watched the movie all the way through without wanting to fast forward it, which is more than I can say for like being a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I wanted to fast forward the fucking theater.
That's true.
But you know, it's the same type of film though. That's the thing. It's the same type of film as Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Beginning, but it's just executed completely differently.
It is actually better.
Yeah, it's a lot better.
So anyway, this is the first entry of Warner Brothers Raw Feed Company, which is going to focus a lot more on direct-to-DVD horror releases. And
I think this movie's already been on Sci-Fi, hasn't it?
Yeah, they've had the cut version on Sci-Fi.
I can't imagine some of the scenes making it on Sci-Fi.
So, you know, I would actually recommend it if you're into movies. It's got some comedy elements. I don't know if it intends for it to be that way, but
it doesn't matter. It's
Warner Brothers
you'll find
is
it.
Releasing it, and you'll find this in Walmart, won't you?
Yeah, it's in
Walmart.
Yeah.
So go get it. I recommend it.
I definitely recommend it. Completely different.
Yeah, check that one out. And the last one we have is one that we've both been looking forward to for, I don't know, at least a year, is a movie that's been delayed for at least 2 years. It's Lucky McKee's The Woods.
I didn't know what to expect going into this movie because he doesn't really have like a lot of films to compare anything to. He's got May, and then he's got the episode Masters of Horror. I think that's it, isn't it, besides this movie?
That's it, yeah.
So I loved May. I didn't care that much for Sick Girl, which was his episode of Masters of Horror. But I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I wasn't blown away by this movie, but I was surprised it was as good as it was.
Yeah, I think the thing about this movie was, like, it was another one that got sort of mixed reviews online so far for some reason. I think people were expecting another May, and they really didn't get that. It was something...
No, it's nothing like May at all, really.
Yeah, it's something completely different. It's more of a atmospheric Argento sort of...
It is, yeah.
...tale about Agnes Bruckner, I mean, goes to a private school, and a lot of weird and bizarre sort of shit happens. Her, Agnes Bruckner's classmates just start to vanish one by one, and, you know, she wants to find out more about what the hell's going on. And it's another one that's along line Argento. There's not a huge plot line in it. It's basically just focuses
on... There is like a small backstory about, you know, these three girls that practice witchcraft who were at the school a long time back, and it's sort of like an urban legend kind of thing. And they were supposed to be, you know, people found out that they were witches and ended up, what was it, would they burn them alive, or what did they do to them? They called them out in the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't remember if they burned them. I think they did. Anyway, but they were supposed to haunt the woods.
Yeah, and the woods
is place.
Supposed to be haunted, too.
Well, no, the whole thing is that the actual woods in the film are supposed to be one giant evil entity. You know, you can't really get out of the school because the woods are protected by this, you know, they're all part of the witches and all that stuff. But you come to find out a lot of things about the people that run the school, which you can give away a lot. But and then Bruce Campbell comes in and has one of the oddest fucking roles I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like
he's her father.
Yeah.
Actually.
He doesn't speak for the first half of the movie, and he barely speaks for the second half. But, you know, I guess he has a better role than I thought he would for a film like that. But it's all about this Agnes Bruckner character trying to figure out what it is exactly that's going on, because she keeps having these dreams about certain people in the school that, you know, disappear, and these children that keep disappearing in her dreams. And she starts to kind of figure out that people that are running the school are something not exactly right with them.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what's going on.
The real star of the movie, though, is the way Lucky McKee directed it, because it was so much like Argento's movies, but not ripping it off. Like, it had the atmospheric feel to it.
The three main, I guess they're teachers or headmistress or whatever it is at this school, I thought were really interesting characters. You got Patricia Clarkson, which she always, you know, acts her ass off in a film. You got the other woman who I don't know her name, but she was the one that had the tick, where every time she would say something, her head would twitch and stuff. And then you had the woman that was kind of the surveyor that looked over all the stuff that went on, you know, with all the girls and stuff.
Right.
And it was kind of a weird combination of actresses that really worked well, I thought.
I was so surprised by this movie, though, and I think it's what led me to freaking love the movies itself, because it's just, there's just so much talent there with Lucky McKee, and for some reason, like, they will not allow any of his movies to be released.
Yeah, there's really no reason why this movie wouldn't work in theaters. If shit like Grudge can make it in theaters, then this movie could definitely make it.
Yeah.
It is almost like movies like that in the atmospheric way, except, you know,
it's a lot better.
It's better, yeah. It doesn't turn into shit.
So it makes me mad, sort of, because May was an awesome movie, probably one of the best movies of the new millennium, in my opinion. And I haven't seen Sick Girl. That's one I haven't seen, but that could never be in theaters anyway. Mm-hmm. I think that The Woods and May should have both had a theatrical release, and it just really pisses me off that they didn't.
But I think Sony put that out, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy that at Walmart, too.
Yeah, this is at Walmart, too. This one was originally, I think it was an MGM film. Sony bought MGM a few months ago, so they finally released the disc. I'm glad they did because I really enjoyed it, and I will probably be watching this one again soon. It's one of those movies that you'll watch each time and probably get something, learn something new from it, you know. Yeah. A lot of stuff in it.
So good flick, though.
Yeah, I would check it out. As far as extras go, I think it's pretty bare bones, so not a lot of extras going on, but hey, I doubt there'll ever be a special edition of it, so go ahead.
Just be lucky that it came out. It took like 6 years. Yeah,
go ahead and buy that one. Sony has that, and you can go to deepdiscountdvd.com and get it, amazon.com. Check that one out. I recommend it.
So I guess that's all. That's all the reviews
that's
we got.
That's all, folks.
That's all the show.
Yeah. Until next week, when we'll possibly have someone from the Halloween franchise, I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill.
And, you know, you keep eating your fried chicken, bowing down the Colonel, and drinking your root beer, because...
Listening to bluegrass, reading your papers.
Yeah, because we're going to be here next week on deadbeat.com.